So thanks for being here this morning. Normally we come to the second service, so most of you are probably familiar with us. You see us running around. We're the ones on Wednesday nights, we fill up an entire side of the food table filling little plates. Or you might see us, we're usually up in the balcony, we take up like a third of it up there. Or you'll see us afterwards in the parking lot, kids chasing me, we play follow the leader getting to the car, and I'm just going to clarify, they cheat. So I get to rat them out here. As Seth told you, we have four kids that we've adopted. We have three that are fostered to adopt. That just means we're about to adopt them. And then we have two more that are biological. And you'd think, man, nine kids. You guys got your hands full. You must be done. And the answer is no. In January, or December 31st, my daughter will turn 18. And we actually open our home back up again. And there are four young men that we are in consideration for to adopt. And the reason we're doing this is sibling groups are a little tough to adopt. Most people don't want to take on four in one shot. That's overwhelming. And one of them's a teenager. People don't normally want to adopt teenagers. When you hear that, you think you guys must be crazy. And the answer is no, we're not crazy. It's a level of insanity that is so far beyond crazy. So I want to share with you our story. My wife, Erica, she's the oldest of nine. I'm the youngest of nine. And she's got five biological siblings. And as they started getting older, her parents realized they still wanted some kids in the house, and they started doing foster care. They ended up adopting four. And so that's her four youngest siblings. In my family, I'm the youngest of nine. I have an older sister who adopted a little girl. She did foster care for a little bit and adopted a little girl who's now given her three beautiful granddaughters. I have a brother who has adopted two kids. One's a special needs little girl who's adorable, and he adores her. And I have another sister who did foster care for years, and she did foster care for teenagers. She would take them in and kind of teach them about life before they aged out of the system, because the statistics for kids coming out of foster care are not good. I want to share with you a verse that it's one of my favorite verses, and it's Psalms 127, 3 through 5. It says, "Children are a heritage from the Lord, offspring of reward from Him. Like arrows in the hands of a warrior are children born in one's youth. Blessed is the man whose quiver is full. They will not put to shame when they contend with their opponents in court." And there's a couple things in there. Actually, there's a third one I just caught. There's a couple things in there that really speak to me. One, having so many kids, my quiver is full. I'm a blessed man, and I thank God for that. But also, it says that children are a heritage from the Lord. And if God sees kids that way, then He must see me that way, because I'm one of His children. And that just delights my heart to know that God sees me that way. But there's also another part that I just caught. I didn't even share this with the first group. It says, like arrows in the hands of a warrior are children born in one's youth. It must mean I'm still young if I've got all these kids. Why do we need foster care? I'm going to show you a little video clip, and I want to introduce it a little bit. It gives you a little bit of a, it's kind of a watered down version. It's a simpler look at how kids come from the point of trauma to where they're in a foster home. And so pay close attention to the police officer, the caseworker. Listen to what people are saying to the kids. But also, what I really want you to do is put yourself in the shoes of these two little girls. Imagine yourself in their situation. Now, this was put on by a group out of Georgia. The statistics that are in there somewhat relate to Colorado, but I will tell you Colorado statistics are much worse. But let's go ahead and watch this real quick.
Next door neighbor called it in, said she heard screaming, yelling, banging on the walls for about 20 minutes, and suddenly it stopped. I arrived on scene, found the mother upstairs unconscious. The poor kids were scared half to death, hiding behind the bed. Family services is on the way now to take custody. Yeah, he beat her up pretty good.
Hi, girls. My name's Miss Hannah. What's your name?
Jessica.
And what's your name?
Her name is Livy.
You know what, Livy? I have a sister named Olivia. Is your name short for Olivia?
Yes.
Well, it's really nice to meet you. I work for the Department of Family and Children's Services, and my job is to make sure you're safe, okay?
I'm going to see my mom.
My mommy's at the doctor, and they're going to help her feel better so you can see her again, okay? Do you have any other family we can call? Maybe grandmother or your aunt?
No, Grammy died.
Okay. Well, I have some really nice friends named Mark and Stacy, and they love kids, and you can stay with them until your mom gets better. Okay? Do you have anything special we can get out of the house before we leave?
Livy needs Blueberry.
What's Blueberry?
She's Livy's bunny.
Oh, okay. Well, let's see if we can find Blueberry. Okay? Do you think they'll be warm enough in here?
I'm sure they'll be fine.
I wish I had something for the little one to cuddle with, you know? Like maybe some toys or something. Benjamin never was into any stuffed animals, though.
Yeah. Cuddle with a football.
Well, he is his dad's son. I feel so bad for them, though. She said they don't have anything from their home. You think they'll be too far down the hall from us? I wonder if they even have any pajamas or...
Honey. It's gonna be fine. We'll figure it out. Okay?
Okay.
Hey. Hi there, girls. I'm Mark.
It's okay, Livy. He's really nice.
Hi, girls. I'm Stacy, and this is my son, Benjamin. He just told me that he wanted to get a snack. Would you girls like to come get a snack? Okay, come on.
It may take some time, but they'll warm up to you.
We'll do what we can to make them comfortable.
Yeah.
Do they have any bags or anything?
They really don't have anything. You need to make an appointment with the Foster Care Support Foundation. It's what they do. They provide for kids that come into care with nothing. It happens quite often.
Mm. Well, this is great. Thank you so much.
Let me know what else I can do.
Oh, really. Absolutely.
Thanks so much.
Mm-hmm. Great night.
Everything okay?
She wants Blueberry, but we couldn't find him.
Oh, I'm sorry you couldn't find your friend, okay? But tomorrow I can take you to a special place where you can get any type of stuffed animal that you want. Would you like that? Okay. Have a good night.
Right now, we're 3/4 of the way through 2015. In Mesa County, we've had 2,833 abuse referrals for abuse or neglect on children. That puts us on pace to have almost 3,800 referrals for neglect or abuse. Of that 2,800, 1,244 were accepted for assessment. That means Mesa County looked at it and said, something is there we need to look at. Of that, 193 are unduplicated child victims. That means it's 193 kids so far this year who have never been in the system before that are in there for first-time abuse. There's 272 kids in Mesa County foster care. It's a lot of kids. 95 certified foster homes. There's only 95 homes to take care of them. Those of you that are good at math, that's roughly 3 kids per home. Those of you that are really good at math, that's 2.8631 kids per home. And those of you who know kids know that you can't fractionalize them. So what's going on there is we have 95 homes that are certified, but not all 95 homes are open right now for kids. There's homes like mine and Erica's where we're considered full until my oldest daughter turns 18. We're considered a closed home. But when she turns 18, then we'll be an open home again. We can take more kids. Some homes we have some friends who they've had kids for quite a while, up to a couple years, and those kids are going back to their biological parents. And so they need time to heal and recover. You can't spend 2 years investing into the heart of a child and not feel it. So they close their home for a while. We have other friends who've had very difficult children, and it's been hard on the family, so the family needs to heal as those children have left. But for whatever reason, there's 95 homes that are certified, but the number that are open and that can take kids is much smaller, which means the number of kids per home goes up. There's not a lot of homes in the valley like mine and Erica's that will take a sibling group of kids. They'll take one, maybe two. So what that means is we have to put kids in group homes. We don't put the littler kids in group homes, and television would tell you we put the cute ones, we keep the cute ones for ourselves and we put the others out there. That's not the reality. The reality is we take the most vulnerable children and we put them in a safe place. And sadly, that means the teenagers have to go to group homes. Group homes are not the best place for a kid to grow up. In Mesa County right now, there are 101 foster kids in what we call concurrent homes, and they're waiting to be adopted. It means those kids' parents have lost their parental rights, and the home they're in is going to adopt them. That's a concurrent home. Is the county will say, you know, we think these kids may or may not go back to their biological parent, so whatever home we put them in, we want that to be their forever home if they can't go back home. That's what Erica and I are. We're a concurrent home. When we bring a kid in, we make it known to the county, if he can't go back, we will take him in as ours. Here's the sadder statistic. There are 35 kids in Mesa County up for adoption that are not in concurrent homes. What all those words mean is that there are 35 kids available for adoption that nobody wants. 90 to 95% of those kids are teenagers. Colorado, any given day of the week, has about 10,000 kids in foster care. Now, Arizona has about 15,000 kids in foster care. And so the governor of Arizona, Jan Brewer, called the leaders of all the big major churches together, and she brought them in and she said, listen, people, here's the deal. The government makes terrible parents. We're not good at this parenting thing. We need you to bring your churches together and to start helping us take care of these kids. Something's got to change. Chad Moore, who is the lead pastor of Sun Valley Community Church, did a Sunday service, and he had one, and their church is very active in foster care and adoption. So he had a foster parent on the stage, an adoptive parent, but he also had another lady up there. Her name is Regina Calcaterra, and she wrote this book called Etched in Sand. Now, I will be honest with you, I have not read the book yet. I listened to her interview, and I did read some reviews on it. It's a true story of 5 siblings who survived an unspeakable childhood on Long Island. And part of what she describes is they're 5 kids from 5 different fathers. And the mom was an alcoholic and a drug addict. And There were times that they were homeless and lived off the street. And it's a pretty horrific story, but I will tell you the book, as it's been described, is a page-turner. It is a tear-jerker, but it's worth reading because in the end, they all do okay. But Chad Moore asked her a question, and he said, "Tell me, what did it feel like to be a kid in the foster care system?" And this was her response. She said, "I felt more like I was an abandoned animal that was left on the side of the street, that someone may pick me up along the way and bring me to a shelter, where then someone would decide to take me home. And I had no control over whose home I was in or how I was going to be treated in that home." It's a pretty tough spot. And that's why Arizona realized we need to get the churches involved in taking care of adopted kids and foster kids. So you'd ask the question, and what does the Bible and what does God have to say about foster care? And you would say, "I've never read anything in the Bible about foster care, so I'm going to share those verses with you now." James 1:27, it says, "Religion that God our Father accepts as pure and faultless is this: to look after orphans and widows in their distress, and to keep oneself from being polluted by the world." And what he's saying there is, listen, God wants you to live a good life, live a right life, live a righteous life, and take care of kids and widows and single moms. That's what makes God's heart happy. Matthew 18:5, Jesus said this, "And whoever welcomes one such child in my name welcomes me." It's pretty clear what God wants us to do for kids, for widows, for single moms. So then the next question arises, what does it take to be a foster parent? And maybe the better question is, what does a foster kid want and need? Well, I'm going to share a couple things with you on that. I'm going to share a couple personal stories here. First off, as a foster parent, the number one tool is a good sense of humor. I'm going to take a little side journey here. I was driving in my truck. I love to listen to CSN, Calvary Satellite Network, and Patrick Morley comes on. He does Man in the Mirror Ministries. It's like a little, it's like a men's discipleship ministry. And he comes on and he's talking about when he and his wife were married and they had young kids and they had just gotten some nice furniture. And his kids are in there and they play on the furniture, and he's all bothered by this. He's like, "They're going to scratch it up and ruin it." And his wife just didn't even faze her. So he said one day he sees his son with the car on the table, and he comes in and he's chewing him out for running the car on there and scratching it. And she comes in and she said, "You stop it. I will not have you ruin a $1 million child over a $300 table." I thought, man, that's awesome. So now let's jump to my story. We had a toilet that overflowed, flooded. We had some poor construction in our home, so it actually flooded through the ceiling in the kitchen. So we'll make a long story short. I had had to pull the toilet. And so the toilet was all taken apart. It was sitting on a towel in the bathroom inside the bathtub. And I had, shortly before our vacation, there we go. Hey, that's better. Shortly before our vacation, I had to take the toilet out of the tub because I had pulled my back. And so soaked and got my back feeling better, but I never put the toilet back in the tub. So as we're getting ready to leave for vacation, I walk past the bathroom and it's like, oh God, that kind of stinks. So well, I just must need to run some water down the drains, and we've got sewer gas coming through the P-trap. So I run some water, close the door, we're good, we go on vacation. We're gone for 12 days. We come back, I walk past the bathroom and, oh dear God, it smells like a campsite latrine. It's horrible. All right, I go in, I run more water. That'll solve it. I'm going to be fixing it here in the next couple days, which is tomorrow. And I, Eric and I get the kids all settled. We go down, we're watching TV. Everything's unpacked. We're just kind of relaxing. They're all off in bed. And we hear somebody get up. So she pauses the TV to listen. And they don't come downstairs. And we're thinking, well, they must have gone to the bathroom in our bedroom. And all of a sudden we hear a toilet lid. No. I jump up and I run to the bottom of the stairs and I flip on the light. And here comes our sweet little guy, Nicholas, out of the bathroom. He's just blinded by the bright light. I said, "Nicholas, did you just pee in that toilet?" He goes, "Yes." I said, Nicholas, it's not hooked up to anything. Why did you do this? And he gave me his famous answer that he gives us for everything. Because I wanted to. $20 towel, $200 floor, $1 million kid. It's like, go to bed. So you have to have a sense of humor. You've got to let some things roll off your back. Another kid we had, it was a little girl we had with us for about 2.5 years before she went to her adoptive family. And we were sitting in the kitchen one day, and just out of the blue, Dad, why am I so dark and you're so white? Well, sweetheart, you're part Mexican. So we talked about that, and I go through the whole thing, you know, and explaining where Mexicans come from and all of that, and okay, whatever, and she's gone. And I'm thinking, like a typical kid, it went in one ear, out the other, and it'll be lost forever. Like 4 months later, we go out to Victory Life Church. There was a comedian there, so we're out to watch that. And I'm taking her to the kids area to check her in. And it's their kids area, says Victory Kids over it. So I nudge her and I said, hey, are you a Victory Kid? She goes, no, Dad, I'm a Mexican. There's hope. They do hear. They listen. What I want to share with you next is a letter from a boy who was in foster care in Oklahoma. It's not easy to read. It's probably not going to be easy to hear. But this is what he wants in a family. Things I want in my family. I want food and water. Don't hit on me. A house with running water and lights. I want love. Mom and Dad, don't fight. I want no drugs. Don't kill my pets. Help with school. Nice, clean clothes. No lice. No bugs in the house. A clean house. A clean bed with covers. Don't sell my toys. Treated fair. Don't get drunk. TV in the house. Let me keep my games. School stuff. Nice shoes, my own comb, soap, nice house and a safe place, heated continuously. Last thing he wants is a toothbrush. Chad Moore asked Regina, all the times that you were in foster care, what was it you wanted most? Regina said this, all I really wanted was a parent to give me unconditional love forever. There's a verse, I think, that describes the heart of what they both said, and it's this. Proverbs 13:12. Hope deferred makes the heart sick, but a longing fulfilled is a tree of life. I've shared all of this not to shame anybody or to guilt anybody, but to empower people, to encourage people. All of us as Christians, we're familiar, more than you imagine, with adoption. Romans 8:14-17 says this, for those who are led by the Spirit of God are the children of God. The Spirit you received does not make you slaves so that you live in fear again. Rather, the Spirit you received brought about your adoption to sonship, and by him we cry, Abba, Father. The Spirit himself testifies with our spirit that we are God's children. Now, if we are children, then we are heirs, heirs of God and co-heirs with Christ, if indeed we share in his sufferings, in order that we may also share in his glory. So, final question might be, how can I help? That's a great question, and I'm glad you all asked that. For foster care, Mesa County has 3 different agencies that you could go through. There's Mesa County Department of Human Services, Aerial Clinical Services, and WIMSPIRE. Now, if you were interested in adoption, actually your choices broadened. You could go to one of those 3 places. There is also the Colorado Heart Gallery. And I would really recommend just go onto that website and read the stories of the kids. If you're not interested in any way whatsoever, I really beg you to go on there and read that. And become familiar with their stories and see these kids that are in up for adoption. There's also Bethany Christian Services. They're here in Grand Junction. They're an adoptive service. So that's another option. Some people would say, you know, I'm not real sure about this. Maybe I don't want to jump in so crazy like you and Erica. So there are other options. There's partners where you can invest 2-3 hours a week in a kid. I'll give you some really scary statistics. Most of the mass murder shootings that have happened recently are from young men who didn't have fathers in their homes. Prisons are full of men who didn't have fathers in their lives. If we can invest a little bit of time into young men and young women, then we can start changing some lives. Partners is a great way to do that. There's also another great organization. It's called CASA. It's a court-appointed special advocate. CASAs, Erica and I have had three or four different CASAs. I'm waiting for her to show me fingers. Four different CASAs. She's the brains of the operation. They have been, two of them are absolutely great friends. We love all four of them. They are huge help. They are the eyes and the ears for the judge. The judge can't be there to see what's going on, so the CASA does it. They come to our house as foster parents. They see how we're taking care of the kids. They talk to the kids. They talk with us. So they get to know us and see what's going on in the kids' lives. They go to the parents' meetings with the bio parent, or the kids' meetings with the bio parent. And they go and they experience with the bio parent how they're treating the kids, how they're relating to them, if they're getting it. And then they work with the biological parent to say, are you doing all the things you're supposed to do to get your kids back home? And then they go back to the judge and say, hey, this person's either A, getting it, or B, isn't getting it. So the CASA is the child's best friend. I'm going to close with this little part here. Tom Pappen was a former director of Mesa County Department of Human Services, and this is a story he had told somebody else. They related it to me, so I haven't heard it directly from him, but it's kind of a paraphrase. He said he had a dream one night, and he dreamt he was standing next to a river, and all these kids were, they're drowning in the river, and they're being swept away. He's pulling him out as fast as he can, trying to save these kids. And all of a sudden it dawns on him, wait a minute, who is throwing the kids in the river? If we can stop them from throwing them in the river, we can save all these kids. Well, we as a church, we need to be the ones that stop them from throwing kids in the river. We need to reach out to the broken young men and women who break their children. We need to catch these young men before they become alcoholics and drug addicts. We need to mentor them and raise them up. And just because they live through a cycle of abuse, they can break that cycle. And these young women, who just because their mom was a teen mom, doesn't mean they have to be a teen mom. Just because their mom was a single mom doesn't mean they have to be. We as a church need to reach out and catch them. But we also need to reach out to the men who abuse their wives, and to the wives who might abuse their children. And we need to welcome them in with love. Because if we can stop them from hurting the kids, we don't need any of those services. We're going to close with a little video here. Wednesday night, I'll be doing the service. If anything I've shared with you today has touched your heart, spoken to your heart, please come Wednesday night. I've got three videos I'm going to show you. They really give you a beautiful look at what happens in the world of foster care. They're great videos. They're put together very well. They've won some awards at the Sundance Film Festival. More than anything, I'll have a lot more information to share with you that night. This is a little teaser video for that. Also, in the lobby, and this is a side note, on the table just over here, there's some flyers. Next Saturday, we're going to have a men's ministry breakfast for Warrior at Heart. We have a guest speaker. His name is Michael Thompson. He wrote the book Heart of a Warrior. And he's going to be there speaking to us. It's from 8 to 10. You can actually show up at 7 if you want. And we'll also have a silent auction. Breakfast is free, so please come join us men. Sorry, ladies, it is a men's ministry thing. So please watch the video and see the clip.
The statistics are against me. I know that. hope for my future is clouded. But I am not a statistic. I am a person. I am lovable. I am worthy of care. History. It's not my fault. It's not because of me. And it doesn't have to be what defines my future. This my story. It's not my own. This, my story, is an ever-changing journey. And you can walk a while with me.
Papa God, thank you so much for your passion for these children. God, we pray that you put your passion in all of our hearts. God, we thank you for your words that were spoken today. And God, I pray that hearts would be moved and that you would plant the seeds and feed those seeds, God, to build a fire, to grow the desire to reach out and help these kids, help these wounded parents. God, I thank you, and I thank you've been here with us today. In Jesus' name, amen.